I know he's at first. You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here is a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to U of Tretomy Radio. Today is Sunday, the 27th of March. 2011, it's almost April. Spring's not anywhere near ready. It's not even going to be anywhere near for me here till around June, July, maybe. But for the rest of you guys, man, spring's around the corner. Hope you guys are looking forward to that and enjoying it. We've got a great guest on. He's been gone for a long time since July. He's been busy. But the previous two shows that he was on... were very well received, very popular, and requests constantly coming in for more. So, we have Doc back with us again, and that means that this is an episode of Militia Medic. We're going to be having some more great discussions with Doc about all things dealing with medicine, the body, working it out in the field, as well as how to take care of yourself out there. So, Doc, welcome back. Glad to have you with us again.
Well, yeah, it's nice to be back. It's only been, 8 months or so?
You know? 8 months. It's been a while. You've been gone. Yeah. You've been missed.
It's been a nice vacation.
You've been missed. We've had a ton of requests to get you back on and to get another medic show going, so.
Well, I can't upset the employer. You know, Ella Bean's just nice, so I've got to, you know, work with them, so.
Hey, you know what, man? You gotta do what you enjoy in life, man. And you said you really enjoy doing that gig, so you know you gotta get what pleasure in life you can when you can.
Oh yeah.
Well, listen, you were telling me earlier, just a minute ago, that it's still pretty much frozen. You know, the dead of winter where you're at as well.
Oh yeah, it's butt ass cold. I mean, supposed to warm up into the 40s this week, but still get back down into the teens, but. I'm just waiting for spring to be here and get rid of the mud season, so.
Yeah, I'm tired of the cold, man. I'm tired of seeing snow and everything. So, what has been going on with you, Doc? You've been gone the last 8 months. What have you been up to?
Well, doing my usual seasonal employment job, which is working for L.L. Beans as a customer service rep. You know, I'm the one when you make the phone call in to place an order. If you're lucky enough to get me, you know, you'll be talking to me and. I did that from September till the end of February. Then they let all of us seasonal employees go. And then I was hoping to, take care of do some spinal surgery. But got a wacky doctor down in the VA system in Boston that says I got arthritis. But I don't know. It's not what the other doctors are saying. So go figure. Obamacare is in full swing now.
Well, you know... Obamacare, you know, that whole Obamacare thing is very open with what it is. It's the minimum health care possible. That means the very least they can afford to give you. Take two aspirin, call me next year. You know, that's what we're looking at. That's what they're, you know, sporting off. And again, I invite anybody to look around at countries that have socialized medicine, you know, that universal health care system like Canada, Great Britain. Read their newspapers. See what they're saying about the healthcare system.
Well, I heard that Great Britain is getting rid of their healthcare system and going back to their getting rid of that socialized stuff and going back to the traditional form of healthcare now because they said it don't work.
It's broke. They can't even afford the doctors anymore. You know, they're getting rid of nurses and doctors like crazy. You know, the waiting list. You know, there's people dying in the waiting rooms here in the hospitals. Waiting to be seen in the emergency rooms. That's in Canada. This is a problem in Alberta. You know, you die waiting to be seen in an emergency room. So there's socialized medicine for you.
Well, I'd like to see the politician that make these rules and decisions from the bottom up, you know, be exempted from that health care that they get, you know, the gold plan, beyond the system that we experience here as civilians, you know, the working people. And, you know, I'd like to see them go sit in an emergency room and watch them die or bleed to death while they're waiting on somebody to get take care of them. You know, I want them to experience the pain. Am I evil? Yeah, I am evil. I mean, the world has put me this way. You know, they want to treat people like that. Well, they're going to get the same thing back, and I'm going to dish it out to them.
Well, you know, that's right. You know, these people, they're not going to go see that doctor that you go to see, that VA doctor. No, they're going to Camp David. That's where they get to go. They get to go to Camp David and go see those doctors, the doctors at the presidencies and stuff. So, yeah, they're on a completely different system than you or I that they want to put us on. You know, hell, I get, you know, the dog, my cats get better health care from their vet than what they're talking about giving to us. So, kind of the reason for the shows that we're going to be doing here tonight, you know, we're going to be talking about taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, one way or another, we'll have to take care of ourselves because the government is not going to do it, and the doctors out there will not do it.
No, so we better start learning some skills again. We better start, you know, in medical, you know, caring, you know, basic medical treatment is some of those skills that we've lost. You know, we used to be able to do certain things for ourselves, and now we can barely put a Band-Aid on. So, you know, hopefully this show is one of those shows that are out there that are getting people to start thinking and reading and studying and learning. And hopefully the things we talk about on this show, especially the Militia Medic show, will never be needed.
Well, I hope not. I hope my skills, you know, since my days of probably walking around the woods and, you know, going up on the front lines, you know, doing that sort of stuff is pretty much limited. I got a couple friends of mine. I keep joking with them to make me a four-wheel drive wheelchair so that I can carry all my gear and go up into the woods and do what I need to do, but I don't know if that'll work or not. It's pretty sad when you can't carry your combat gear and your medical bag and, you know, because all the pain you're in and everything, but, you know, got to be another way to do it.
Hey, you know what? You know, this is where we adapt and improvise. You know, that's pretty much what we're doing is with the militia today. We are so out of practice with the militia. We don't even, you know, some of us, you know, the vast majority of us haven't even studied militia enough to really understand what it is. So, you know, we're having to adapt and improvise as we go, it seems, today. So, you know, it's interesting. One of the subjects that you wanted to talk about today, which was water purification. You know, I just the other day on last week, I believe it was on the Monday show, or maybe it was a couple of days after the Monday show. Maybe it was just in the chat room, but somebody I hadn't seen in a while or hadn't seen for the last little bit. They were in there telling me that they had been really sick from drinking contaminated water. And as soon as they said that, I thought about this show.
Well, contaminated water, unfortunately, is pretty much anywhere and everywhere on this planet. You know, I forget what it is. It's like 90% or something like that. The world's water is not even, you know, it's not drinkable because it's not treated or something like that. It's a very high number that's of percentage. You know, it just makes me, you know, it's like, wow, this is, you know, you take water for granted. You know, the body has to survive on water. You can only live like 3 days in a normal environment without water. You know, if you're out in the desert, like down in Arizona, you're talking, you know, less time to live without water. The body needs water to survive and to, you know, replenish itself and to, you know, to heal itself and everything. It's just crazy that, you know, people, you know, just take water for granted.
Oh, it is. And what's even more amazing is that 90% of our water supplies on this planet are undrinkable without being treated.
Yeah, that's a sad thing, and you know, I've been watching several YouTube videos. I've been, you know, buying, you know, medical books to put in my library left and right, and read all this other stuff that's going on. And you know, I'm not going to spend $150 on a Katadyn water filter and MSR. Granted, they're nice, but you know, if you watch, I don't know if you watch YouTube at all, but there's a nice video on there. I can't remember the guy who did it. I think his name is Jason Class or something like that. He made a water filter out of a NOS PowerShot bottle, and they're only, you know, they're it's a It's a two-ounce bottle, and it's got the orange cap. It's a blue bottle. But he made a Field Expedient water filter out of that. And so I get to looking, and it took me forever to find two of these bottles because I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're selling them anymore or what's going on, but I finally found two of those NOS PowerShop bottles and put them together like he suggested in that video, and got the activated carbon that he recommended. You know, so I made two Expedient water filters for like less than $15 or something like that that I can use out in the field.
How did he make a water purification system out of a couple of NOS bottles?
Well,
those energy drink—it's those energy drink bottles, right? That you're talking about.
Yeah,
those
the little energy drink bottles. They're probably about twice the size of a couple of fingers. The little power shot bottles. He cut the bottom off of one, and then the orange cap that's on the top, that thread, you keep that. You poke a hole in that cap, and you put an adapter piece to it, so you can do your the clear plastic tubing,
right,
that you can find for like the fish tanks and that sort of stuff. Well, you get that, you cement it all in with like some waterproof type cement, if made for plastics, and then you get another cap that goes on the bottom to put on the bottom of this PowerShot bottle, and you take the cap and you invert it so the threads are facing out of this cap. So you can actually screw it on to like a 20-ounce Mountain Dew bottle or a 1-liter Mountain Dew bottle. You can screw, it's the same size threads.
Okay.
You can screw that on there and you put an adapter piece through there. And the cap that I ended up using on the bottom of these NOS PowerShot bottles come off of another PowerShot drink, and this is the Monster one. It's the Monster one that's in the black plastic bottles with the black plastic caps. The cap that fits, that's on the top of the Monster drink, fits perfectly inside the diameter of the NOS PowerShot bottles. And so, you fill it up with, you put activated carbon in it, and activated carbon is carbon that's been hit with electricity.
Okay.
And the reason why they do that is to draw the bad stuff, the negative stuff, to the carbon. Because if you don't electrify it, it won't trap any of the bacteria, the viruses, or anything else, the metals that are out there floating, the pesticides that are floating in the water. So that's why that's what activated carbon is. It's been electrified or energized. And so you put in, all I did was put in a couple cotton balls down at the bottom, put activated carbon in there, a couple more cotton balls, and screwed it all together, and it works perfectly fine. I get, I get filtered water, because what you got to do with water, you have to filter it first, and then you have to purify it. You have to do both. You can't do one or the other. And that's why some people, probably are getting sick. They're only doing one and not the other, and they're getting sick. They're getting, diarrhea, cramps and all that crap, pardon the pun, going through their system. And it's because they need to do both parts and not just the one.
Okay. See, I did not know that. So I am learning something here as well. I love it when you come on. Most of the guests we bring on have information that I don't have, that they are really good at the things that they do. So, I go back and I listen to the archives myself, especially with shows like this one. You have to. You keep going back and listening to things and learning from the things and practice what you do. Like, I'm going to go out and look for a couple of these tonight and see what I can do with them. If I could make it. I'm from New Mexico, so you've got a problem with bad water out there in New Mexico. There's very little of it as it is, and a lot of it is contaminated, unpotable water.
Yeah,
it has
I mean,
E. coli in it. It's bad.
It's bad stuff. So yeah. I mean, if you drink that crap, I mean, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get sick, and if it's left untreated, guess what? You die. Another bottle, if you cannot find the NOS PowerShot bottles, you can find the, it's the Red Bull. I guess Red Bull has a version of their you know, power shot. I don't think it's what they call it, but they have a version in Red Bull. It's in their blue bottles with their logo and label on it. The cap, however, the threads on it are a little bit bigger than to fit on a 20-ounce or 1-liter-ounce bottle, or even the I'm sure you've heard the collapsible platypus water containers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you with these NOS not, with the NOS PowerShot ones, the threads will fit on a platypus collapsible water container. It's a standard thread. It's like, you know, fire hose. But the Red Bull, their caps are a little bit bigger, bigger in diameter. And so what you got to do is you got to take one of those soft drink caps, either a 20-ounce one or the 1-liter one, and actually you got to need to cement it inside another Red Bull cap and then drill a hole through it so you can get your adapter piece through it, your little nipple piece for your tubing, and it'll work that way. I figure, you know, you got to try to be a MacGyver. You know, the crap has already hit the fan, as a friend of mine's girlfriend told me. The crap has already hit the fan. We are just getting hit with pieces of feces every time that blade flings around, you know, pertaining to the different events. And so, you know, I've got in my mind that I'm not going to go out and spend $150 for a Katadyn filter or anything like that. I can put $150 towards some medical equipment that I need to take care of my patients out there in the field, and that's what I'd rather do. But if I can make something for 10 or 15 bucks and be a little MacGyver, which we all need to be, you know, I would rather do that and put the money towards something else that's going to be more useful. You know, if I wasn't doing the medical thing, I'd be putting, you know, the $150, you know, towards buying ammunition or more magazines for my Glock 17, which I just bought, you know, a couple weeks ago. So, you know, if you get a chance, I'll shoot you my address that I have on YouTube. I have a YouTube page. Okay. I didn't upload anything. I just certain videos that I like, and I keep them on my page so I can keep going back to them. And this Jason, I think his name is Jason Class. He did the video. It's like a two-minute and something video. I have it saved on my page, and you just watch it a couple times. You write down notes to make diagrams. And you sit there, oh wow, duh. I mean, it's amazing what you can do. I mean, there's same thing with a Brita water filter that you put the water filter.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That you can put inside the Brita pitcher.
Right, right.
There's a YouTube video on YouTube where you can take that filter, which uses activated carbon as the filtering media. You can use that filter and use it to filter water out in the field so you can to complete one half of the method to you make it drinkable. It's amazing what's out there on YouTube. I mean, I don't. Mm-hmm. I go through them and I evaluate them. It's like, no, it's a little kooky and wacky, but you know, this one I'm going to go try this Brita one because I happen to have a Brita filter downstairs. So,
well, you know, it's amazing. I've really looked at the prices of these water filtration systems, even especially the portable ones. Let me tell you, they are steep. And then for a few bucks, you can, like you were talking about, you can make your portable water system. You know, you can even make larger systems as well, like you were mentioning. So with a little bit of effort, you know, getting off the couch and doing something instead of sitting on the couch, you know, we could actually save a lot of money, make things ourselves and protect ourselves and think about our future.
Yeah. You know,
water will be scarce.
Water will be scarce. And, you know, if you buy a Katadyn or an MSR, you know, I don't mean to ding on their names, but, you know, you've got to buy the ceramic filters and their other filters that go with them. Well, sooner or later, like the filters that I make, they're going to get clogged up, they're going to fail, and they need to be cleaned out or replaced or whatever. You know, some of those filters I've seen for Katadyn are, you know, upwards to $100 for a filter, and they're good for a couple hundred gallons depending on the turbidity of the water. And I'm like, holy crap. I mean, $200, that's like, you know, that's like putting, you know, 34 gallons of gas for my truck, you know, almost, you know, but...
That's a filter.
It's just amazing. It's just, you know, if you got stuff just lying around, what all you can do, if you think about it, just by watching videos, they get you to think, well, wait a minute, why didn't I think of that? I mean, that's what I use. It's kind of like an education tool. You know, you can't. The day you stop learning is the day you get buried in the ground. That's why I say, you know, you do this stuff for so long, you forget it. You go back in, you start reading it. I was like, yeah, you dummy, you did that back then, didn't you? So, but that's what it is. You just got to be a MacGyver about this stuff.
Well, you know, that's the great thing about the internet right now, too. If we use it as a tool, we can actually better ourselves incredibly. You know, if we actually use the internet to gain skills and to learn new things, you know, the information is out there. It's amazing what you can learn. So, you know, I encourage, you know, what is your YouTube channel, or what is your YouTube name? What do you go by there?
Oh, you would have to ask me that.
We ask the tough questions here, Doc. You should know that.
Yeah, you know, I just flunked that class. It's I think if you look under 18 Delta Medic, 18D Medic, you should be able to find it that way, because that's what my screen name is. I don't know if that. I think that's how they have it listed.
Okay, 18 Delta Medic, 18D Medic. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll definitely go check that out. I want to, you know, hey, if I can make water filtration systems, you know, for pennies instead of actually buying them, you know, I mean, even a cheap, like those filtration straws, those are what, 10, 15, 20 bucks a pop?
Yeah, they are, and they're only good for 20 gallons. You know, and the other thing is, you know, we're talking about filters. You can do, if you don't have these type of filters that I made and you're out in the field, you can make a filter out in the field with, you know, like grass, sand, and gravel, you know, just layer them in different layers in a container, pour the water through that, it'll slowly filter on down. It's a natural filter. And if you have a bunch of, you know, if you look in your survival books, that's what it teaches you in there, to use some of, you know, use how to use nature to make a water filter, and it'll filter it out. It ain't going to get it all the way down to 0.2 microns to get rid of some of the crap, but it'll get rid of the most of the stuff. And, you know, and that's the big thing. I mean, there's other stuff that still goes through all these filters that are smaller than 0.2 micron, but and they can make us sick and everything, but I guess we've just built up a resistance or immunity to it, or we're not getting enough of it as it is right now in the water to have it affect us. But, you know, nature has got many stuff out there to use as filters and everything else, so...
Somebody had mentioned in the chat room, well, we had discussed this before on one of the previous Militia Medic show, and I've never done this stuff, so, you know, I've never had the need to. And I've actually used some of this stuff, and I couldn't imagine putting it in water and then drinking it. But what about things like shock, you know, like pool shock and
chlorine.
Bleach, chlorine, things like that?
Yeah. Well, with chlorine bleach, regular bleach, household bleach that you'd find in a grocery store, you have to get the unscented version, but as soon as you open the container, you know, you buy them in a gallon container, whatever they come in, half gallons, as soon as you open that lid on that container, it starts losing its potency, you know, of the chlorine bleach that's in there.
Okay.
And it's only good for like 1 year, and after that, you've got to throw away what's left over, because it's only good for 1 year. It's like opening up a bottle of nitro pills, you know, you carry in your pocket. You know, once you crack the seal on a nitro pill bottle, that, you know, it loses its potency, you know, within like 90 days, and you got to throw the bottle out because it doesn't work anymore because it's been exposed to air. That's basically what it is. But yeah, I know what he's talking. I don't know who it was. I can't see the chat room, but the shock stuff. You just got to make sure it's the there's some shock stuff out there that will work, and you have to make sure it's nothing but sodium hypochlorite, I think is the term, I think is what they called from back in my days. But yeah, bleach will work. You can use iodine will work. Those are methods for purification. Bleach and iodine, and that aqua, the little small bottles you carry with you. The AquaPure bottles that come like 50 tablets to a bottle.
Right. The water purification tablets.
Yeah, water purification tablets. Those are made out of iodine. And as soon as you crack the lid on those, you know, you've got to use them within 90 days. Because other than that, they're, you know, once you're exposed to air, it starts decreasing the effects of the loop tablet. You're paying, you know, like $8 or $9. you know, for that bottle, plus the neutralizer, so it doesn't give you the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another product I came across. It's called Polar Pure. And what it does, it's based on iodine. It uses iodine crystals, and the iodine crystals stay in this dark tinted bottle because you don't want to get sunlight sunlight into it. And what it does, and I've actually gone out and bought 7 of these bottles from a friend of mine who owns an archery shop up here, and I still carry the water purification tabs with me. But, you know, those, you know, you got to use 2 tablets for 1 liter. So you get 50 tablets. That's only good for 25 liters of water. This Polar Pure, when you follow the instructions for mixing this up, will purify up to 2,000 liters of water for about anywhere from $11 to $16 a bottle.
That's not bad.
2,000 liters, that's 500
that's
gallons.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's a lot better than those water purification tablets.
That's 500 gallons of water. I mean, there's no way you're going to drink 500 gallons of water out in the field.
No way.
No way.
Now, do those degrade as well? What's the shelf life on those?
They don't degrade. They have an indefinite shelf life. Once you crack the if you go to Polar, P-O-L-A-R, equipment.com, it'll take you to the website that talks about this Polar Pure water purification.
Okay.
And it's an amazing product. And like I said, I bought 7 bottles at $10.50 a bottle from a friend of mine because I get the discount up at shop. And, you know, one bottle, I think it's a 2-ounce bottle. You just pour in water. You let the water sit in the iodine crystals, and the iodine crystals cannot come out of the bottle at all. So they have no way of escaping.
Okay.
You let the water sit in there for, I think it's like an hour. And then it tells you on the side of the bottle, and it says depending on the temperature of the water that's in the bottle, there's a thermometer on the side with a color indicator, and wherever that color indicator is at, it tells you how many capfuls of that water you've just purified in that bottle to pour into a contaminated 1-liter bottle of untreated water. And you let that set for like 20 or 30 minutes, and you're good to go. But the thing of it is, you can purify up to 2,000 liters with this product. I haven't used it yet because it's not warm enough up here to... We've still got snow out in the woods and everything, but I'm going to use it probably come about May or June. We're going to be doing a bridge building exercise at a place where I used to live as a kid on a pond, or it's a 740-acre lake, actually. And I'm going to use it up there and see what happens. But Polar Pure is an excellent product, and I've got 1 container in each of my combat gear. I've got one in my bug-out bags, one of my search and rescue bags. So I've always got a way to do it. But you have to filter and purify water. You have to do both.
Okay.
In order to make it drinkable or potable.
Now, purifying, you know, something else about the filtering anyways. You know, you had mentioned earlier about learning things and knowing them, and then years later, after having not used them for a very, very long time, you realize you forgot about them. This is one of those things. I have not done this in a very long time. But especially like in the deserts, filtering the water there is important. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of the water you find is going to be, it's going to have salt and sand and everything in it. Rock, sand, and charcoal. The burnings from your campfire.
Yes.
You know, you could use those to filter the water and take out, you know, all of the things that are in there. But you still got to purify it afterwards, though.
Yeah. And you can use you've got a T-shirt with you on your back or in a pack. You've got socks with you, and you can use that as an additional media to filter the water through. I mean, and that's some of the things they tell you about when you go through your survival training, or even look in the survival books about using, you know, handkerchiefs or socks or something like that to use an additional filter media too.
Okay, so socks even. There we go. See, I did not know that. I would never have even thought about that. I probably would have eventually one of these days. I mean, if I was out there. But then again, if I've been out there for a while, I don't know if I want to use my socks.
Well, I mean, you know, that's something else to consider. It's to me, if I have to look at it as, we'll put ourselves in the desert, out there in the deserts of the white sands of New Mexico, because I've been out there.
That's a terrible place.
I've been out there before, and, you know, you're out there walking around. You know, you're coming down, you find a place that does have water, you automatically have to assume that water's contaminated no matter where you find it at. So you've got to filter it. Yeah, I'm going to use the sand. I'm going to use the gravel if I can find some rocks or something, if I can find some grass out there, which may not be findable out there in that out there in New Mexico, and especially that white sands area. Yeah. And then if I've got a T-shirt or a sock, I'm gonna use that material to filter, because your concern is to keep yourself alive.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the main thing. You got to keep yourself alive. You got to do whatever you're gonna do to keep yourself alive. If you're drinking water out of a dirty sock, big deal. I mean, what's it gonna do? Nothing. It's gonna keep you alive. You know, you just got to put it out of your head. It's like trying to eat some, the protein, as I call it, out there in the woods that drop into your food as you're cooking on the fire. You know, you just got to eat it and just go with it. So.
Yep. No, you're gonna have to do what you got to do. I had to eat the bugs. It wasn't a pleasant experience, but I ate the bugs. I ate the grubs. I ate things that crawled on the ground. It wasn't fun, but yeah, you gotta do it.
But it keeps you alive. It's protein. It keeps you alive. So
it does. It does. You're stuck out in the wilderness for 3 days with no food, and all you have is a knife on you, and your clothes. You know, I just did that here recently. Once in the summertime and during the wintertime as well, up here in Canada. Let me tell you, you will eat whatever you find crawling on the ground.
Yep. That you will.
And you will, you will strain water through your socks if need be. So, yeah. You know, but that also brings us to another thing that we were going to bring up for discussion as well, was sanitation out there. Field hygiene and sanitation out there as well. And a lot of that has to do with water.
Yes, it does. Say you're, let's talk about, I guess the operations are still going on along the Arizona border, with those guys out there still working that. You've got to set up, just pretend you're setting up a, either a bug out location or a patrol base,
Okay.
That you're basing, you're doing everything out of. Well, you're near a water source, so you need to make sure that whatever you're putting into the soil, whether it be your feces and your urine, or even your scrap food waste, the oils that are coming off the foods, the fats and stuff, does not get into that water to contaminate it even more. You don't want your, like your mess hall facilities, like we had in the Army, we had the field kitchens, the mess tents and the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
They kept that a certain distance away from a water source. And I think it was like 100 meters. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. But they had to be like 100 meters away from a water source. The latrines had to be like 100 meters away from food and water. And it had to be downstream of where you were drinking from, and that sort of stuff. So sanitation is very important. You've got to keep, not only for the ground, but also for you, because if you go, long periods of time without taking a bath and scrubbing yourself or washing yourself off when you're out in the field, you got all this bacteria and other nasties that, they're already on your body, but we take care of it pretty much on a daily basis in some aspects. But if left unchecked, well, I can actually make you feel, get you sick, and in some cases can kill you because you don't do the proper, field hygiene and sanitation of yourself. And same thing with your clothing. You got to wash your clothing, that stuff left unchecked can actually hurt you in the long run.
Oh, it is. I mean, just look throughout the countries through throughout like Northern Africa, like India and places like that. all throughout Africa. I mean, the biggest, you know, one of the biggest health concerns they have out there is clean water and personal hygiene.
Yeah, you got to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom. You know, wash your hands before you, you know, touch your eating utensils or go for your food. You know, wash your hands after you eat. I mean, it's the same stuff that you hopefully your mom and dad taught you when you grew up as a kid. You know, that way you can keep yourself healthy, and you don't, and that way you don't pass that stuff on to the next person that's coming down along the line. You know, getting contaminated. You know, getting that person sick. So, you know, same thing with washing your dishes out there in the field. You know, whether it be your mess kit or your canteen cup, however you fix your meals in, you know, you got to make sure you clean those. And if you don't, well, guess what? You're going to get sick. And that's not what you want. You don't need to be sick when you're, you know, 30 hours away from civilization by walking out on foot, you know, that type thing. You need to be out there as healthy as possible. It, you know, some of this stuff may sound ridiculous, but if you think about it, if you're sick, who's going to help you? You can't help yourself. You can't crawl. You can't treat yourself. You can't start your own IV unless you have the fluids with you, you know. But, you know, you have to take care of yourself out in the field. But, you know, living out in the field in the woods is no different than living at home. Except here in home, you've got the modern conveniences. Out there, you've actually got to go get water. You've got to clean yourself instead of turning on the faucet and, you know, deal with the cold ice water instead of having hot water coming at you. So that's what you got to do. You got to keep yourself, you know, clean and fit, and by doing that, it keeps you mentally strong and sharp when you're out there.
You know, one of the biggest problems with military camps and, you know, in ancient times was disease. And the disease usually started from within the camp itself. It wasn't brought in by outside sources. It started within the camps because of, you know, really bad sanitation conditions, personal hygiene, you know, and that decimated armies. You know, that really decimated armies. You know, sometimes armies didn't even get to go to the fight because they were already decimated before they even got there. So these are really important things to think about. You know, one of the major problems in World War II was trench foot. World War I and World War II was trench foot because people, you know, and this is really bad, like in areas like Washington State, where it rains during the spring and the fall. It's just monsoon season. And I don't care how good your equipment is. You can have the best Gore-Tex waterproof this and that out there, but if you have 5 days in the rain, you will end up soaked. And then what do you do? You know, your feet are starting to rot away and everything. What do you do? So these are really important things we have to consider on a daily basis, and they're small things, but it's these small things that will actually just break us down and take us out.
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, you get trench foot, you know, you get the soldiers in World War I, they fought in trenches like my great-grandfather did, you know, slugging out in the trenches. And you're down there. Where does the water go when it rains? It goes down to the bottom of the trench, and you're standing in it day in and day in, day out. That boot or whatever you're wearing, sooner or later, gets soaked, and there's nothing you can do except, you know, just stand in it. And that's how, you know, the feet always getting exposed to the wet, being wet. You end up getting the trench foot. You know, you've got to have another pair of shoes with you, or dry them out and have socks with you. Dry them out and, you know, put the powder on your feet and check your feet for blisters. You know, if you don't keep yourself healthy and you're out there with a group, what's that going to do for the rest of the people?
You know, it's going to get everybody else sick. It's going to get them. It's going to get them sick as well. And it's going
to. Well, and they're going to have to end up taking care of you instead of doing what other duties they're supposed to be doing. You know.
Exactly. In fact, I believe we had even talked about that, or on a previous show, or maybe it was somebody else I was talking with. But when somebody becomes injured out in the field, that automatically takes out three people.
Yes. You know, it's like getting shot with an M16, that 5.56 bullet. You know, it's not designed to kill you. It's designed to injure you and do the nice big wound inside of you. Because it can actually bounce off the bones, it can bounce off the organs, and what it does, it, you know, just tears you up inside if you're not lucky to get killed. And it takes, the medics are going to come out there and treat you. Then you got to get a litter team to either carry you back to wherever or put you on the tracked ambulance, 113 or you know, 577, wherever you got to go. You know, you got to evac you back, and then you got all these people in the, you know, the field medical facilities that they have occupying to take care of all of that. You know, you talk about great amount of time to take care of you, and that's what that, you know, it's like chemical and biological warfare. It's designed, yeah, it'll kill you, but it's also designed to maim or injure the people, and that way mass quantities of logistics and other personnel are taken away from the front lines so they don't have to fight, and to take care of the wounded and evac them back out. It's very manpower and intensive, you know, things that, you know, it's almost sick how they sit there and think about how they're going to do combat. You know, let's go and unleash this mustard bomb, mustard gas, and that way we'll take away about 50 people because they're going to be taking care of all the people that are need to be taken out of the ditches. You know, it's just it's kind of a sick, twisted thought how they do this stuff. But, you know, and it makes sense when you sit there and think about it. It does make sense. You take people away from the front line. Okay, now you can infiltrate even you know, further and easier with less resistance. But, you know, I don't know.
True. I mean, that is true. So, you know, I think these are a lot of the, you know, I've been out with people on FTXs, and, you know, I remember a long time ago when I first went out, I didn't know anything. You know, I was 17, 18 years old when I went out my first time. And I'll tell you, for the 3 days we were out there, I don't think anybody really washed or bathed, and nobody really took care of, you know, there was no hygiene. We just went out there and we did. We were in the desert and, we had water. We took water with us. You know, but during that 3 days, nobody really washed or bathed, and it was just the way it was. You know, imagine if we were out there for a week. What would it have been like then?
Well, imagine if you're out there in some training exercises that I used to do.
For a month.
You're out there for 90 days, you know, for a training exercise. You imagine what happens during those time periods. So, I mean, just think about it. You know, luckily they, you know, rotate you in every 3 weeks so you can get a shower. But in between time, you know, we do what's called a horse bath. You know, just put the water in an empty ammo can, heat it in front of the heater off that's coming off your 113, whatever, you know, the track vehicle I was in, heat it up that way as best you can, and, you know, and try to take a bath as best you can. And that's all it takes. I mean, so you wasn't feeling real good, but you felt better.
What about, you know, you had mentioned, you know, the fact that we can, you know, we had talked about the bacteria and all the problems that this can lead to, unsanitary conditions out there, especially if we're out there on, you know, if you're out there, I mean, if you're out there on extended patrols or you're out, whatever it is, you know, bad situation, no matter, you know, whatever it is, you're out in the woods now. And we talked about getting sick as well as injured. Now, what are some of these things that we need to? What are some of these things that we should be carrying in our medical kits out there, especially concerning medicines, things, you know, things to actually treat ourselves once we get sick?
Well, depending on what the thing is that's causing you to get sick. Say you got the stomach bug. You know, you got the nausea, you've got the vomiting, you've got the diarrhea. You know, you can carry Pepto-Bismol with you, or you can carry Imodium AD with you. You know, you can buy that stuff over the counter and not have to worry about a prescription. You've got other stuff. You can make your own homemade Gatorade solutions that you can do instead of having to buy Gatorade. You can make sure to actually make your own. Or there's even stuff up there that it's called an oral rehydration salt, I believe it's called, and it actually puts electrolytes back into your body, because if you vomit or if you crap it out of you, you're getting rid of those vital electrolytes to keep your body balanced that you need, like the potassium, the sodium, the chloride. You need those balanced, because if not, if your potassium drops too low, or if it goes up just a wee bit high, you know, on the high end, I think the range is going to be like a 3.5 to 5, somewhere in there is the normal range. You know, if it drops down below that or goes above it, that has a direct effect on the heart. If it gets up too high or too low, you can actually, you know, stop the heart, you know, if it's bad enough. that's what effective potassium is. So you got to keep those electrolytes in balance and check, because if they go out of whack, well, it throws everything in your body out of whack. But you've got all rehydration solutions. You can Google them. You can find them out there. You can make your own Gatorade if you don't want to, you know, spend the money to get Gatorade. You know, you can take the powder form with you out in the field, put it in, you know, a Ziploc bag. When it comes time, you can go ahead and make it up that time at that point and make it. You know, carry, like with me, I carry Imodium A, I carry Pepto-Bismol. I have, let's see, I only have those to address the stomachs. I have medication like Tums and Rolaid for the heartburn. I carry, you know, the Motrins. I carry the Aspirins. I carry the Tylenols. The Benadryl. I carry Zantac, Pepcid AC, that sort of stuff. The stuff you can buy over the counter. I carry that with me. Carry like 20 pills of each in a little small Ziploc bag you can find in the arts and crafts section of Walmart. They've got these little Ziploc bags. There's like 50 or 100 bags that comes in a pouch, and you can put those pills in there and label the pills what they are when they expire. And I actually made up little cheat sheets that I carry with me in case I'm incapacitated. Somebody can look at this cheat sheet and say, okay, it says that does not get, says, you know, don't give to under a kid under the age of 12 because it can cause Reye syndrome or something like that. Just those sort of little hints and tips. But those are sort of the meds you can carry with you that you don't need a prescription to bug the doctor with. I don't know if that was going off topic or not, but that's what you need to do. Not only preparing for the trauma, but you've got to be able to take care of some of the medical stuff too, whichever you could find. And that person that's in that area really needs to know what is in that area, because we have talked about it before. I think it was in the first militia medic conversation where we talked about the lizards and the rattlesnakes, the the tarantulas, that sort of stuff that's out there in the deserts of Arizona, New Mexico, in the thorns of the, you know, off the cactus. We talked about that. So you need to know that specific area. If you got like black widow spiders or the Bramicluses or even the copperheads, snakes, you need to make sure you've got, if you have access to the antivenoms or other stuff, you need to prepare yourself, bring that with you. So that's how that works in that aspect.
We had a couple questions from the chat room real quick, if you don't mind. Peach was asking, she was saying that she's got three pregnant women in her committee of safety. What are some of the things needed to deliver a baby? I know in the old days, back in Eastern Europe, you know, they used to just, you know, squat down, drop the baby, and keep picking the potatoes. But what is really needed, though? What is really needed for
childbirthing? Some people even do the I'm trying to think of the it's called the like a live water birth, where they're actually sitting in a pool and they deliver the infant in the in the water. I think it's called a live water birth. I think it's what it's called. Let's see. One of the books I did buy, and everybody should get it, at least your medical person should get it, it's called Where There Is No Doctor. The newest version came out in September 2010, and it's designed to be for remote-type situations, and it's loaded with wealth of information, and it's pretty much on English understanding level. But you're going to need like a bulb syringe, so you can suction the baby's mouth and nose out. You're going to need some type of flashlight so you can see, some type of, scissors so you can cut the umbilical cord. You're going to need like shoelaces or paracord to tie the umbilical cord, the lifeline between the mom and the infant. You got to tie it off in two places, and when it's done pulsating, you snip it. You got to have some type of clamps, a couple of different clamps like that. Have some needles and syringes. You can get needles and syringes without a prescription by going to, and I don't know what they have out in other parts of the United States, there's a store called Tractor Supply, TSC, and you can get needles and syringes that are used for veterinary grade, but they're the same thing. They're all sterile. They're just sold to people that are on farms because, you know, farmers are always giving their animals some type of injection of medication or whatever. And you can buy – that's a good source of getting needles and syringes or even scalpels at a veterinarian supply store without a prescription, without getting in trouble with the DEA, believe it or not. You need some type of gloves, whether it be the nitrile gloves or even the rubber, you know, lawn and garden type gloves that used to go like up your arm a little bit.
Right.
So you need some type of gloves to, you know, to keep you from contaminating the, you know, the baby as it's coming out. Let's see. You need some type of suturing material in case there's a tear or anything like that. You can use dental floss as a suture. You can use, nylon thread as a suture material. Scissors, a couple bowls for you washing your hands, and for also catching and examining the placenta, which is called the afterbirth.
Mm-hmm.
When that gets delivered, it's like the mom, you know, the mom is, you know, say she's got one child, she's delivered the child. Now she's got to go through that birth process again by delivering that placenta. And once that comes on out, you've got to put that in a bowl, in a container, catch it in the container, and you need to try to examine that placenta as best you can to see if all of it has come out of the womb. You don't want any part of that still left up inside of her, or it's been detached, because if it has, she can go into, get septic, you know, with infections and stuff. So you need to have a container to catch that the placenta. You need alcohol to clean and sterilize your hands. You need brushes, you know, for cleaning your fingernails. You know, like a scrub brush to get under your, to get the dirt out of in between the fingernails. Some type of antibacterial soap to clean your hands with, to scrub up real well. You know, plenty of clean cloths and rags. I think back in the old days when I watch these the Western series, they used to boil rags, and to do that, and they would essentially would sterilize those cloths and rags. So there is some stuff that you do need to get ahead of time that you help for the delivery. You also need, if you can come up with a stethoscope or something, so that way you can place it over the abdomen and check to see if you can hear the baby's heartbeat. Because if that baby's heartbeat is slowing down, which it's not supposed to do, that's usually a sign of distress or there's something wrong. The cord wrapped around the baby's neck and or other stuff is getting into, you know, different types of complications. So, but that's just some of the stuff that she would need.
Sorry about that. Real quick, I forgot, somebody had asked, what did you say you could tie the cord with?
Well, you can use like a shoelace.
Okay, shoelace.
Shoelace. You can use paracord. You don't want something that's really thin like thread, because if you know that will actually can if you tie it up tight enough, too tight, you can actually slice through the matter, you know, out of that cord. That's why you want to get something that's a little bit wide, like a shoelace, you know, tennis shoe shoelace, is nice wide material. It can't. There's no way you can cut through the umbilical cord, or you can even use paracord. If you've got that, everybody should have paracord with their, you know, combat gear and everything. So, but something that's a nice wide material, even cloth that you've ripped out of a sheet, you know, will, as long as you can tie it up, make a knot, and tie off that umbilical cord in those two spots, you know, you'll be good to go.
Okay, so basically anything that you could tie off, that you could tie the cord off with works fine.
Yep, just as long as you don't cut through the cord, you know, with that material.
A couple of other questions that came in. Poultices, homemade penicillin. Are these, say, the poultices, those are just natural salves, you know, herbs, things like that. You find things like that in the wilderness. What about homemade penicillins, though? That's a different story there.
That's a different story. With penicillins or antibiotics, I should say, especially with penicillins, it was pretty much handed out like candy, you know, when it first came out, because it was the new wonder drug and everything. A lot of people have developed a resistance to penicillin, and if they get a dose of it, whether it be injectable or in pill form, they get what's called they get an allergic reaction to it, also known as anaphylaxis. And sometimes it can actually be deadly. It can kill those people. So any penicillins or any type of cillins or an antibiotic, you need to be careful of, whether it be in the natural form or that you get from a pharmacy. You need to make sure that person does not have an allergy to those type of medications. That's the big thing. Not only with antibiotics, with any type of medication you're giving, no matter what the class is, what it does, for over-the-counter med or prescription meds, you, for all the people that are in your group or you associate with, it's a good idea for whoever that nurse is or the medic is going to be that's with that with that group needs to know a medical history of every individual. You know, what allergies to foods, allergies to pills, allergies to latex gloves, and the latex in the syringes. You know, latex is a rubber material. I'm allergic to latex because I've worn medical gloves many, many years. You know, I've been doing this stuff for 28 years. You build up an allergy to it sooner or later. So the only type of glove I can wear now is nitrile. So anybody that comes in contact with me and I tell them when they do their kits, always have nitrile gloves in your kits. Well, why do I want to do nitrile? Because I have an allergy to latex gloves. That's why I tell you to use nitrile, so you don't kill me, essentially. Oh, really? So, but that's why you need a complete medical history. I know they may be reluctant to give up that information, but, you're out in a remote situation or, you know, the economy's broken down, whatever. There's no doctors. There's no hospitals. There's no clinics. No pharmacies. You're the person that's going to be taking care of them. You need to know what can be done to that person, you know, as far as medical wise. What can't be done to them? You know, okay, I'm allergic. You know, me personally, I'm allergic to Benadryl. Benadryl is a medication that's used, one of the medications that's used in combating an allergic reaction. I can't take that medication. I have an adverse reaction to Benadryl, so I've got like one foot already in the grave, so to speak, when it comes to allergic reaction, because I can't have one of those medications that's needed.
Well, it's very true. Like myself, I don't know if I still am or not. I know the body changes every 7 years, so sometimes you get rid of some allergies and you get new allergies. But I know when I was little, I was allergic to penicillin, so I always let everybody know.
Chances are, if you're allergic to penicillin when you was a little kid, it's still a good thing. Yeah, you're allergic. That's the safest thing to do. Even if you have a question about it or you doubt you are, put it down. You know, allergy to penicillin. You know, I'm allergic to a third generation antibiotic. It's the like Omniceft is one of the antibiotics. That's the name of it, called Omniceft. It's a cephalosporin class of antibiotics. That medication, I took it one time when I was working in my doctor's office. I was having an issue with something. I got an infection, so they gave me as a treatment. Well, over a course of 4 hours, I was noticing that I was having a hard time breathing. It felt like my airway was closing off. I was getting short of breath all the time. I was getting the other signs and symptoms of an anaphylactic reaction. And sure enough, my airway was closing off, and it was getting to the point where they were going to have to intubate me to keep me breathing. We never knew that I was allergic to Omniceft. So Omniceft or the cephalosporin class of medications will kill me. And that's why you have to put that down on your paperwork, you know. You know, so for the group that I hang out with, you know, that I have up here in Maine, you know, I say, hey, you want me to be your state medical person? I need to know your medical history.
Right. No, you do.
You know, granted, you have reservations about it because you don't want nobody knowing about this stuff. So what happens when we're on a training exercise and you injure yourself or something like that? You're unconscious. You get shot or whatever. And I don't know your medical history. And I do something to take care of you, which I think is going to help you. All of a sudden, I end up killing you because I don't know your medical history. What's that make me feel like, you know?
That's very true. I mean, it could be even something so small as being allergic to bee stings.
Exactly. You know, bee stings, you know, and there's a simple treatment. If you don't have epinephrine in the Benadryl, you get some Adolph's meat tenderizer. You can buy it in a store. Get Adolph's meat tenderizer. You make that into a paste. You put it on where that injection is. It'll suck the venom and right out of you.
So well, that's interesting. That's interesting.
That's a home medication essentially. Home treatment you can use is put Adolph's meat tenderizer, make it into a paste, put it onto that where that stinger's at, and it'll draw the venom out of there.
You know, something else you had mentioned. Something you had mentioned that you could get scalpels and stuff from vets. That brought up something I believe we had discussed it before. But somebody had mentioned something in the chat room. What about tetracycline? You know, we had brought up before. You know, products like Tetrafin. You know, that you can get at any pet store.
Yeah, you can. It's there is if you go to. James Wesley Rawls' website, that survivalblog.com, if you go into his first aid /medical section, there is a posting in there where it talks about using pet-grade antibiotics such as fish, like fish acetylene and fish amoxicillin and fish penicillin on adults, on humans. And there's an article in there where it talks about pet-grade medications, antibiotics, can be used on adults, and you don't need a prescription to get these, and you can actually buy them online through Amazon.com. You can buy these medications through Amazon, and it was because they're used to treat fish.
There you go.
But you have to go to survivalblog.com, and you've got to go to his first aid /medical category, and you've got to search through there. He's got literally probably a couple hundred pages of medical stuff, but it's in there. I think it was back in sometime last year, like June, July, August, some time frame of last year, where it does talk about there was a doctor talking about using fish grade antibiotics and medicines to take care of humans. And I'm going to see if I can find it because I downloaded it on my hard drive because I keep it. And I'm actually going to see if I can find it while we're talking about all this stuff. But, yes, you can get tetracycline in these tractor supply stores. You don't need a veterinary prescription. You've got to make sure you get the proper dosing to fit for a human, because tetracycline is more than likely going to be put into a horse, cow, sheep, you know, that sort of stuff. So you got to make sure you get the proper dosing on that. But yes, you can get tetracycline in the stores, in Tractor Supply, and some other medications, but you have to be very, very careful and picky about the ones you get. There is a book. It's called The Survivalist Medicine Chest, written by Ragnar Benson off of Paladin Press. Do not get it. It's full of errors because some people have that I've talked to have picked that book up, but the book is full of errors, got mistakes in it. But do not get that one is a word of caution for the people that are out there listening.
Good to know. I know that Ragnar's books tend to be seem to be rather popular out there.
Yes, and there's another one I picked up. I picked up a book called The Survival Nurse, and it says Running an Emergency Nursing Station Under Adverse Conditions, written by Ragnar Benson. And I bought the book, and that was a waste of, you know, $17 or $20 because she does not talk about medicine. She talks about everything but medicine. And that's not what the idea of that survivalist nurse is supposed to be doing. So I gave that book bad reviews. Somebody else might find it useful, but for a person with my skills, it was not useful for me at all. I was very, very disappointed in it. Let's see. I'm still trying to find. So if you got any other questions, go right ahead. I'm going to try to locate that.
Sure. Yeah, another problem. Actually, to address the other part of the question about the poultices, you know, you can pick up any natural. I mean, there was books written. My wife is my wife was taught herbalism by the native. She grew up with some of her best friends were Native Americans all her life, and she would go out on the res with them during the summer, and she learned herbalism from them for years. But she has books all on her bookshelf that talk about natural remedies, cures, salves, poultices, you name it, it's in there for it. You know, and these you can find these books online, you can find them in PDF form. So we have them in, we have our books ready to go as well. So I would
like to do that. Yeah. And, you know, I'm starting to get into this new medications because with my medical conditions that I have them with, you know, I'm going to be, you know, not going to be able to keep my prescription meds. So I'm going to need to find an alternative way to take care of myself. And I'm learning about these natural and I guess what's the other term they call them? Homeopathic medications to take care of you. But my word of caution is always, being the medical person that I am, that you study the information about whatever, you know, like the yarrow root. Read up on yarrow root, find out what it's used for, why, you know, when not to use it. And like I said, you have to have a medical history. I cannot stress that enough. You have to have a medical history as complete as possible on that person that you're working for, you know, working on. And in order, you know, that's the basic stuff. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, you've got to know these medications. I don't know the medications, you know, off the top of my hand, but that's why I have my books, my library with me. I even have it on my Droid cell phone. I can, you know, get into, you know, what's it called? Hippocrates and some other stuff. I have my Droid cell phone with me that I can look into the different on medications and everything, because there's so much stuff out there, you cannot remember all of it. And I don't care if you've been doing it for 28 years or been doing it for 1 year, you cannot remember the stuff. And like me, I don't do it on a daily basis, so I have to, you know, keep always reading about this.
Well, there's always something new to learn. I mean, we have several books. You know, she picks them up because that's what she does. You know, the herbalism, you know, natural foods, you know, foods that grow wild, you know, everything that's out there. We have books that are for the various areas that we could end up finding ourselves in. You know, I have contingency plans. I have three or four different contingency plans. And we've got books on the plants and, you know, not just the edible plants, but the medicinal plants in all those areas. And they're very detailed as well, you know, what they're good for, when to use them, when not to use them, how to use them, things like that. She knows a lot, but again, she doesn't know everything, you know, and it's always good to know what's in your area.
Yes, and, you know, if you're located next to an Indian reservation, and you know, those Indians were surviving way long before, you know, us white people showed up. You know, this was their land. They knew the land, and they survived without doctors. And so they know that stuff. It's in hopes that stuff's been passed down through generation to generation. But if you can find somebody that teaches the homeopathic medications or the natural medications, how to identify, you know, the stuff that's out there in the area that you're in or the area you're going to, learn that stuff. Get the books on it. You know, study up on it as much as you can, because it'll be worth it in the end.
You know, I watched a video, or I watched a movie about I forgot when it was made, but it was a movie about a guy that had dropped out of, or decided not to go to college, or dropped out of college and decided to, you know, pack across America and go live out in the wilds of Alaska on his own for a little while. So he gets up there, and then at the end of the movie, he ends up dying because he ate a plant that looked very similar to another plant. But the book he had was black and white. It wasn't in color, so he couldn't really tell the difference between the two types of plant. The one plant that he ate made it so that he couldn't digest food and that his cells started to break down. He ended up dying. That's very true, though, because I've been out there, and some of these plants look so similar. I could not tell the difference if I had been looking at a black and white picture.
And that's just it. I mean, a book with a black and white picture is not going to do any good. You need the color pictures in order to get 100% true identification. Even then, you may still have questions about whether or not it's the true thing you're looking at.
No, that was very true. Even the wife, we had gone out a couple times out there, and when I was out there, actually learning survival skills from these people, learning to actually survive out there with nothing, you know, my 2 feet, my 2 hands, and that was pretty much all I had, clothes. That was it. But she went out there, you know, she was visiting with them and stuff as well, and it was amazing how much she had forgotten in such a short period of time as well. And some of it was those plant identifications. I mean, if you don't know these things intimately, it can be very dangerous. So, you know, be prepared. Make sure you have as much information as possible and really study it beforehand. The time to learn stuff is not when you need it.
Yeah, because when the time, you know, when you need it, that's when you need it. Because, you know, you don't want to be sitting there with your hands, you know, inside somebody's guts when you're trying to remove a ruptured appendix and you forget how to, you know, or how to identify the appendix. Oh, is that it, or is it? You know, that kind of sucks, you know, if you do the wrong thing.
Yeah, that would not be a good day. What do you mean that was his? What do you mean that was his liver?
Oops. You know, gee, the guy's bleeding out. I don't know why. It should be in his appendix, but, you know. But, you know, it's, you know, we can joke about it now, but the thing of it is, you know, when you're out there in the field or out there in these types of situations, that's not the time to joke about it, you know. It's, you know, you've got to get the stuff done, and you know, and the time to study is right now. And then while you're you know, waiting for something to happen, you know, be looking at it and see what you can find. But you know, learning is an ongoing process. You know, it always has been and always will be.
No, that's an excellent point. You know, there's a quote out there I read, and it said, the amateur practices until they get it right. A professional trains until they can't get it wrong.
Yeah, there's a friend of mine on several of the boards, and even on Facebook, he goes by Tire Iron.
Tire Iron, that's it.
Yeah, and I believe that's what he uses as part of his signature line is, you know, amateur practices it, and then the professional, you know, doesn't, you know, pretty much. So that is his signature line that he uses all the time. And it's very much true. You know, I don't believe there's anything, there's no such thing as a professional. You know, there's no such thing as professional, like, you know, me being a volunteer firefighter, but yet you've got the paid firefighters, which are the union guys, and that says, you know, they say, well, we're the professionals. So that means you know everything there is about firefighting. Well, no. Then how are you professional?
Exactly.
Just because you collect a paycheck and I don't, we still know the same stuff. So, yeah, I'm still trying to find that document with all of my files that I've got here. I cannot locate that document at all.
Oh, no, is that document on your website?
No, I did not put it on my website, and I probably should. I know it's on my hard drive. I'm just going to have to go through survivalblog.com and see if I can find it.
Another problem. Real quick, before we do that, you have a ton of good info on your website, Doc. Why don't you put that out there for everybody?
Oh, I don't even know. I don't remember the name of the address.
I'll get it for you real quick.
It's called Maine Highlands Defense Force is the name of the page. It's listed under, you need to find it as MainePatriot.net, and that'll take you to my website. And it's loaded with tons of information. Anything from medical stuff to food stuff that you need to stock up on, disaster response, the stuff on there about the funding documents, Articles of Confederation. There's recipes that we use out in the when you're out in the field out there in the hiking trails. You know, if you're a bow hunter, the stuff and gear that you need for bow hunting. You know, if you're a combat leader, you know, there's different checklists. Camouflage, cover, and concealment, communications, you know, field gear packing list. Anything you can think of is on there. I've even put discussion threads on there from one website that I subscribe to. And I told them I'd give them, you know, some space on here. But, you know, like doing different mission planning, how to prepare, you know, prepare for a mission. Survival nursing is on there. You know, search and rescue is on there. You know, how to, there's training classes about, you know, specific stuff on trauma, how to do a tracking patrol. It's just loaded with information. And if anybody, I mean, has something they want that they feel should be on this website and it's not there, just shoot me an email. My email's at the bottom of the page. It's the email I use on here is 18 Delta Medic, and D, it's the letter D, so it's 18dmedic @gmail.com. You know, just shoot me an email saying, hey, you know, it might end up my spam box, but I check my spam box because a lot of my mail has been going there for lately. You know, to say, hey, you know, heard you on the Militia Medic show, and we think you might want to put this on your page. You know, it's not going to hurt my feelings. You know, if I've got something on there wrong and needs to be updated, shoot me a message, and I'll put it up there. I'll fix it. Because some of the stuff up there has been on there for a couple years now, and I haven't changed the information, so I know stuff changes. So, but it's called Maine Highlands Defense Force, and it's located at mainpatriot.net.
Yep, mainpatriot.net. I just posted that in the chat room as well. I learned a lot of good stuff there, actually. You know, there was a lot of good information there. I would actually go there. I would recommend it to people. I've actually got what are they called? Those little iPod things with the video and everything like that, but it's got all the capabilities. I got one of those, and I don't use it. I don't use it much, but I'm loading it up with a ton of info, and I've got a solar charger. And if things ever go, you know, that's in the bug out bag. And if things ever go bad, you know, I got a little case, plastic case that it fits in, so it stays waterproof and all that other stuff, shockproof and stuff. But, you know, if things ever go bad, I'm not going to be able to remember everything under the sun. And, you know, besides, you know, things that I know, things that I've printed out, things that I've already got, you know, cached out there, info is going to be one of the most important things you can have.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I've got literally, you know, tons of documents on my hard drive on the computer, and you know, some complete books are on the computer. You know, the electricity goes out. You know, we take an EMP blast. You know, I've lost all my information, and I'll just have to survive on what books that I do have. And yeah, you need to me, if you have to spend money to get a book, you know, spend the money, get the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the book is EMP. Blast proof. It'll survive the EMP blast. Trust me. You know, there's no electronics to it, but the information is out there. You just got to find out what your little niche is. You know, if you want to be the medical person, if you want to be the communications person, if you want to be the person that does nothing but, you know, is the point man, you know, does all the reconning, you know, you need to study up on that and know the stuff inside and out. You know, just, you know, you need to know that stuff better than the back of your hand, because that's what you're going to need.
Agreed. Yeah, you're right there. You know, and I want to stress that iPod thing that I got, that is strictly backup. I don't know how many times I've said it, but I read. You know, I don't do a lot of YouTube. I do YouTube for very specific things. You know, learning things, things I don't know already. Not for information, you know, skills like, you know, woodland survival, something like I'm looking for, how to build a filtration system. Books. I prefer books. I prefer the written word, and everything I try to do, you know, everything I have, I try to get in written form as often as possible, even if I have to print it out myself.
Yeah, paper and ink is cheap. I mean, but, you know, some stuff you can't get the books on. Other stuff you can. And unfortunately, you know, the price of paper and everything, like everything else, is going through the roof. You know, like the ink, I have a Kodak printer. The ink cartridge prices haven't changed, but what they've done, they've shrunk down the size of the cartridge. It used to be a 30cc cartridge. And now it's a 27cc cartridge for the same price. It's not, well, no, wait a minute here, you know. Because the ink is made out of, you know, it's an oil-based product. So everything is going up through the roof, and no matter what it is. So, but you just have to be, unfortunately, you have to be a MacGyver. And, you know, if you've got an idea, you know, you're thinking of something, well, put it out in front of your group that you meet with and say, because maybe somebody else has been thinking along that same line, or they can put two and two together, and you can get this project, you know, jump-started. You know, you talk about that committee's you mentioned somebody had was in their committee's a safety. You know, I never knew anything about the committee's a safety when you started talking about them when you did your little the series on the radio. Mm-hmm. I didn't really pay attention to them. I was like, committee's a safety? What the heck are you talking about, Randy? I mean, what drugs are you snorting? You know, it's like, then I go buy that book, you know, the Minuteman, you know, the myths, you know, the realities and the myths.
Yes.
You know, that the title I gave you, and started reading about the committees of safety and everything, and how the militias are actually supposed to be formed, how they're supposed to be run, who activates the militias and everything. I'm reading it now in this book about the Revolutionary War, and it's like, you dummy, Randy's talking about it right now on this website. Here, you know, it's something, it doesn't sound right, but you go actually read about it, and it makes sense to you now. It's like, oh, wow, we're actually doing the militia stuff kind of bass-ackwards now, so...
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it's not our fault, though. You know, these things.
No, it's not our fault. It's a learning process. I mean,
these things have been stolen from our history books, and we were failed to be taught them. So, you know, like I said, you know, we have to improvise. You know, we have to adapt and improvise and learn. You know, we're kind of learning as we go again.
Yeah, I mean, it's
out there that can bring info that enhances what we know. Bring it forward. Step forward with it, please.
Yeah, because I'm not, you know, if somebody says, hey, you're wrong, well, fine, tell me I'm wrong, but also back it up as to why I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. Hey, sorry, I put out the wrong stuff, and I'll admit it, no problem. You know, bro, it's all a learning curve for everybody, no matter what you'll do. And, like, I'm trying to, you know, dealing with a, you know, an idiot that you and I know in commonality that's up in Alaska and everything, you know, causing some problems. But, you know, I don't want to mention their name or anything, so.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I have a question for you. Let's actually talk about something else that I know that militia groups out there, you know, unit as a whole would be interested in knowing about. What does it take to put a MASH unit together?
It's going to take somebody that has the leadership skills and the ability to direct and guide a team or a group of individuals of medical people. Whether that be, you know, the doctor, that's the leader or whatever, but you got to start with a person that's, you know, good at directing and guiding. Then you need to start recruiting medical people, whether it be somebody that knows nothing about first aid, you know, or somebody that knows nothing about wilderness medicine, or they're an EMT, they're a paramedic, they're an RN, they're an emergency room physician, or even a veterinarian or a dentist. You got to start recruiting medical people from all different skill sets. You know, like myself, you know, working in special operations, you know, you have to know all of that stuff wrapped up into one, because you are that person, you and that's the senior person. So you have to know all that stuff. Can you do all of it? No, I can't do everything at one time. So you've got to recruit those like-minded folks that, you know, want to work in the medical aspects in a remote type of situation where we have no health care like we have now. Well, we don't have any ambulances, you know. You take a round to the femur, you know, you've got to have somebody to work on you right then and there, essentially in the field, instead of going to, to the emergency room, then up into the OR where they can work on you in a trauma center. That stuff, gonna knock me around for all the time that we need it. And so that's part of what this program is gonna be. So you need to get the medical people. You need to start gathering medical supplies, whether it be, medical instruments, over-the-counter medications, dressings, band-aids, gauze, triple antibiotics, Neosporin, you need to gather the medical equipment, basins, syringes, otoscopes, ophthalmoscopes, some of that stuff you can buy on eBay for, pretty dirt cheap price, for $20 or $30. Equipment to put an airway down somebody's throat to help them breathe, O2 tanks. You can make your own backboards and longboards and shortboards. So you need to start getting all your medical equipment. You need to figure out where you're going to have this aid station set up at, or mass unit, whatever you want to call it. You need to figure out where this is going to be set up at. And if you're lucky enough, you can move that equipment, buildings aren't used or anything. If you're lucky enough, you can set it up the way you want it and pre-position all your equipment there now. And then you just got to start, continually do the training, work with the people. You not only have medical people back at where you're at, you need to have some medical people that actually goes out on, like, the recon patrols or out there on the ambushes, or when you're out there making contact with your neighbors that are 15, 20 miles down the road. You need to have some sort of medical person with you, would it be a combat lifesaver, the combat medic, as I call them. You need to have that person, be the extension going out there with them also. They need their equipment and gear, depending on the type of situation, the operation that's going on. You don't want to carry a full-blown trauma kit if you're just going out, and you're not expecting enemy contact. You're in a relatively safe area. You don't need to carry 30 pounds worth of trauma gear with you when you can get by with a little, thigh pack that's, got some trauma and medical stuff in it, or you get a little M3 aid bag that's slung over your shoulder, and it's got a mixture of medical and trauma stuff in it. So, that's what you need to be looking at as far as, for setting up an aid station or a MASH unit.
How do you, as far as learning a lot of these skills, you really have to, it's really hands-on with a lot of this information and things that you're talking about. That's the problem, is that, we don't seem to have as many, qualified medics and people that actually have the skills necessary to go out there and train. So if you guys have people out there that you do know, approach them, ask them, look for these people. And then when you can find them, get them to start training others as well.
And then, if you've got a nice friendly physician, like on my search and rescue team, the medical director is a bona fide emergency room doctor, and he does emergency medicine, and he's done it for 13 years. He found out my skill sets working in special operations as a medical sergeant. Even though I don't have a license, according to the state and national standards, they want you to have a license. Even though I don't have that license, he has authorized me to work under his doctor's license, per se, the doctor's license that they have, that if I need some advanced gear sent in on a search and he's not there, I call him up or radio him up, say, this is what I got, this is what I need. What he does, he'll have it flown in on chopper and dropped in on me, and I can do it. So that's the type of nice, friendly emergency physician I have. Now, if you can find find that type of doctor that's willing to do that for you, you're golden. I mean, this guy will let me – I told him I need to buy IV fluids. He will go – I give him the money. He will go purchase me a case of IV fluids. That's the type of physician that you need to get involved with. If he's willing to do that for you, then, you know, you need to bring him on board.
Especially if you know these skills yourself. Get out there and train the other people. I mean, hell, if you... You know, even if it's not just your own people, I mean, if there's other militia units in your area, go, you know, do get-togethers with them and start training their people as well. You know, even if it's just in the basics, anything, you know, anything is better than nothing out there, so.
You know, and it's right. You know, I've gone up through the ranks of, I did first aid at first, and then I went and became a first responder. Then I got my EMT license, and I became a paramedic. And then, you know, going in the Army, you know, got my being a combat medic, and then become a special operations medical sergeant. You take the little small steps, you work up your way up through. You know, you work in a doctor's office doing labs and, you know, shooting x-rays. You do industrial medicine or occupational medicine or family medicine. You work in ICUs and the ERs. All that stuff is wrapped up, and you get all that knowledge, and you're always learning stuff on a daily basis. And it's just... you're aware of what's going on when somebody mentions something to you. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, like they're talking about the central line or hemodynamic monitoring. Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's when I used to work in the ICU. Whether or not you do it out in the field, you know, have that equipment with you, it's irrelevant. But you know what they're talking about, and you get that exposure. So if you're working at a doctor's office as an LPN or a nurse's aide or a medical assistant or an RN or whatever it is, you know, get out there and learn that stuff. You know, if you find a nice, friendly doctor or nurse or even a PA or a nurse practitioner that's willing to help you learn a little extra stuff, even though you know you can't do it legally, you'd be that much further, you know, better, you know, ahead of the game. So, I mean, if you're going to learn something in the field, you know, instead of learning to be a paramedic, get wilderness skills. Become like a wilderness first responder or a wilderness EMT. Or if you're already a paramedic, take that wilderness paramedic course. Because wilderness medicine allows you to do stuff away from physician contact and your medical director. It allows you to do those things that you normally cannot do when you're working in the back of an ambulance on the city streets of Detroit or wherever. You know, there's other things that you can do in the woods without medical control. That's what that type of stuff teaches you when you deal with wilderness medicine. To me, that's the best way to go, is learn wilderness medicine.
Actually, you know what? I can't agree with you more. Like I said, this is what my wife has been learning for a long time. And to be honest with you, when it comes down to that, if we ever end up, you know, in a, who knows, you know, EMP blast, whatever it is, things just go south, no more refrigerators. I know that she'll be able to take care of a lot of the things that are going to go wrong with us because she already does it now. I mean, she goes out, we go out on the weekends, you know, during the summertime and springtime, and we're picking, you know, and she's finding stuff and she's picking stuff. You know, everything from toothaches to headaches, whatever it is, and she makes stuff. So, you know, she practices on a daily basis, so... You know, these are things that, you know, and again, like you mentioned, low tech as possible is always going to be, you know, still usable in the worst case scenarios.
You know, you mentioned toothaches. You know, if you've got a toothache, well, most people, you know, put like, you know, soak your gums in alcohol or, you know, the stronger the alcohol, the better, or put tea bags on your gums or that affected area. But you can also use clove oil. My grandmother, when she was raising me as a kid, whenever I'd come up with a toothache, she would put either the clove on my tooth, or she would have clove oil. You drop it on the tooth, and that will help you with a toothache.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with another medication you can put on your tooth. It's called eugenol. That is another medication you can find some places. You can put that on a tooth, and that will help you with the pain of dealing with a toothache.
I want to jump in just real quick. That would just be the ethanol alcohol. You wouldn't want to use rubbing alcohol or anything like that, would you?
No, rubbing alcohol. This would be alcohol designed to
potable.
Be taken internally, edible alcohol. Yes,
exactly. Like, you know, Everclear or something like that.
Yeah,
not denatured alcohol, not industrial stuff. You know, people got to be real careful about that. You know, I've seen some real weird stuff on the network. Oh, all you got to do is take rubbing alcohol and filter it through a few pieces of bread and you can drink it. No.
Well, that's funny you mentioned rubbing alcohol, because there were some guys during the first Persian Gulf War that I think they were from like the 101st. They were getting so desperate for alcohol when they were sitting out there in those staging areas that they used rubbing alcohol to make their hooch, or whatever you want to call it. And I think there was a couple of people that actually died from alcohol poisoning. A couple other people got blindness. There was some pretty sad shape from just consuming rubbing alcohol. They did not have the right alcohol to consume, and that's just it. When you're dealing with alcohol and you need to put it inside your body, make sure it's the drinkable alcohol, like Jack Daniels or Everclear or vodka or something like that. Don't get no rubbing alcohol or the marine grade alcohol. That stuff will kill you. It'll kill you in a heartbeat.
And another warning out there also about that clove oil. Be careful in the application of it. Use it sparingly.
Yes.
It will burn your skin. It burns your skin. I applied it for the first time on my own. The wife was at work. I applied it on my own. Had not paid attention to how much she used. Let me tell you, the corners of my mouth and my lips were burned for 2 days afterwards.
You know, you wouldn't think about it. You know, clove oil is considered in my eyes. To me, I'm going to use it for a medical reason. It's considered a medication, so you need to read up and study up on this clove oil before you dispense it or utilize it on somebody, because, as Rainey said, you can get burnt with it.
Not only that, I mean, it can actually kill your nerves. I mean, it's so strong and powerful that it repeated use, especially with too much, can actually kill the nerve.
Yeah, and I did, as we were discussing, I was on James Osley Rawls' survival blog website, and I found that blog entry dealing with fish grade antibiotics, and the name of the article is A Doctor's Thoughts on Antibiotics, Expiration Dates, and it's TEOTWAWKI, The End of the World as We Know It, it's abbreviated, by Dr. Bones. And the date of the article is 26 July 2010 at 9:59 p.m. And the article is there, and it talks about which fish-grade antibiotics can be used on humans. And it's right there in the article. So you need to go to survivalblog.com and get into the medical section. I actually found it by just typing antibiotics into the search engine on his website. And that's how, by going through, like, I had to go through like two or three pages, and I finally came across the article.
You know, I read that one article a while ago. In fact, I had just recently read it. It had been forwarded to me by one of the listeners, in fact. And they had sent that to me, which is why I brought it up to you and I believe it was the first show that we were talking about.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was the first show that we did. And I'll tell you, I had no idea. And when I read that article, I had no idea. And after reading that article, it was well worth my time. You know, that was one of those articles that I truly believed was worth my time.
Yes, it was. And if I remember correctly, I think that was also the same show where I was not well versed in this using natural medications or even fish grade, veterinary grade medications. And when I came across this article, it was like, there you go. And it's been I've always had that stuck in my head, because there's no difference between the medications for veterinary use and the medications for humans, except they have to be in a different dose.
Right.
But other than that, the medications they give us humans are anywhere from 20 to 1,000% higher in price, and the veterinary grade is, probably $3 or $4 for a bottle of 100 pills. That's the main big difference, is that big pharma And that's what they do. They want more money out of your pocket, and so that's why they charge you anywhere from 20% to sometimes 5,000% more for the same medications.
So there's always alternatives out there for everything.
Yep.
You know, all you got to do is look hard enough and educate yourself enough, and you can find alternatives for damn near everything. I mean, you know, Joseph Martino had stated on his show that people have found a way to produce firearms in prison out of everyday common materials in that prison. So there's always ways around everything out there. All you got to do is become that MacGyver in the world.
And, I mean, the internet's just loaded with information. I just did a copy and paste of that article, and I've got it saved to my hard drive. I know I have it on the hard drive. Now I've got it on here again, so I'll be printing it off here shortly. So, but don't always just go to one article and read about it. Go to several other different sources to either confirm or deny the information, and that way you can, you know, keep yourself in check, so to speak. You know, is it real or is it false? You know, but always cross check the information.
You know, that's a good point. The problem with the internet, one of the major problems I have with the internet is that it is so full of garbage, it's unreal. I mean, if we just look back over in 2010, look at all the alerts and the insider info direct from top government officials that some of these people put out, you know, martial law by April, this and that, and all these things were going to happen, and none of them happened.
No, that's just it. They never happened.
And the news is no different. The news is no different, yet we go to one place, we read one story, and we don't really research beyond that. We don't put in our due diligence.
I don't pay attention to American media. What I do is I pay attention to, like, the BBC, Deutsche Welle, Drudge Report, Russia Today. I have Al Jazeera. Matter of fact, I have Al Jazeera News on my Droid. I can go pull up I have all these different foreign websites that I can look at the news media. They actually tell you what's going on in America because American doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. You know, over the last couple of months, I believe it is, maybe even a month or maybe a month, month and a half, I started getting all these emails from people, you know, and some of them were really concerned because apparently the militaries had just merged. You know, the U.S. and Canadian militaries had just merged. And I thought about it for a minute, and I had to think about it, and I was like, oh, shit, that happened 2 years ago. That was on the mainstream news here 2 years ago.
Well, I was still getting emails. I just got one one day last week from a friend of mine about when those the gold presidential $1 coins came out.
Yes.
Remember that several years ago when that George Washington coin came out, there was a big thing, emails coming around saying, do not get these coins because In God We Trust is not on the coin. Yes, it is. It's not on the front like it normally is. It's written on the edge of the coin, on the rolled edge of the coin. And I just got another copy of that email one day last week from a friend of mine, and I sent it back to him. I says, you know, that email is a hoax. This has been going around. I've got these coins. And it's right there on that rolled edge of that coin. It says, In God We Trust, right there in the edge. And so I told him it was a hoax, and he sent it out to his friends saying it was a hoax. So, you know, that's just it. You know, like some stuff that Alex Jones puts out. You've got to go to other sources, other sites, and either confirm or deny the information. That's the bottom line. If you, you know, believe everything that Alex Jones puts out, then we should have been blown up, you know, many, many years ago. So, and we should have been, you know, cross-contaminated with all the cloud seeding or whatever he, you know, the jet streams, contrails. So you have to go search that information out. That's the bottom line.
Well, I agree. You know, oh man, who was it? Steve Quayle. You know, Steve Quayle I hate to point people out, but, you know, sometimes you just got to call it like you see it. 17 years, Steve Quayle has been telling people about martial law every month. You know, twice a year he talks about martial law. It's not, if you know, it's going to happen here, and then when it doesn't happen here, then it's going to happen in, you know, it's going to happen here. And then the next year it's the same thing. And he keeps going through this, and people keep freaking out, and it never happens. And I think it's time we start, you know, doing a little research and realizing, you know, we start calling the BS for the BS when we see it. And that comes with anything, you know, even medical info. I mean, whatever it is, You know, let's promote the good and let's actually, you know, start saying this is wrong. All this person does is lie. He's never been honest. He's never been truthful. It's never happened.
And, you know, speaking of medical stuff, what we're talking, in a survival situation, you know, everybody should have some type of, like, dried beans as part of the survival food stocks. Well, I wasn't aware of this until just earlier last month. I had a friend of mine from out in California sent me an email and was dealing with toxins that are in beans, in the dry beans, like red beans and that sort of stuff. So I'm like, no, there's no way. So I Google searched this thing. I said, toxin in beans, in dry beans. And sure enough, I get lambasted with many, many different articles about a particular toxin that's in beans. If you do not prepare them and cook them properly and long enough, you can actually get this toxin, and it will cause nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, abdominal cramps, and all that sort of stuff.
Really?
Yes. The name of the virus, actually, it's not a virus, it's a toxin. I can't even pronounce it, so I'm just going to spell it out. It's PHASEOLUS, that's the first word, and the second word is vulgaris, VULGARIS. That's the name of the toxin that's in these beans. And if you do not, you know, cook the beans long enough, don't soak them long enough, and discard, you know, the water that they were soaked in, you can actually get this toxin inside of you and cause, you know, like I said, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal cramps, and that sort of stuff. Since, you know, it's essentially from not preparing food right and not cooking it properly. But yeah, I never knew there was a toxin in a bean. And sure enough, she sent me this email last month. It's like, oh, wow, this is something new. So, you know, because we bought, you know, a lot of stuff when we got the tax money back and bought a lot of food stocks, and beans was not one of them. But by reading up on this on the toxicity, it's a lichen that's inside these beans, and it can actually make you sick if you don't do it, if you don't cook your beans right, or you don't cook them long enough, or don't soak them long enough. So it's a pretty common thing.
You know, it's amazing the things that we learn when we actually read and study a little bit. You know, I found that, you know, just analyzing even the things that we eat on a daily basis, I found that when I eat certain foods, I don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't eat those foods, I feel incredible. You know, and it's not bad foods, you know, like certain vegetables, grains, whatever it is. You know, we don't really listen to our bodies a lot. And our bodies tell us when things are going wrong with it. You know, I think a lot of that, we just have to, we've become a very soft domesticated people though. So, you know, that's part of that drawback though. We've become soft and domesticated.
Yeah. And the thing of it is we've lost, all the teachings that came up from from our grandparents, great grandparents and, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, when they had to do the stuff for themselves because they didn't have, you know, cars, they had to walk to school, which might have been 15 miles down the road or whatever. So they had to take care of themselves. And so all that knowledge has been not necessarily been passed down. If it's been passed down, it's been forgotten because now we have all these modern conveniences. I mean, heck, we've got literally some type of fast food joint almost on every corner in a city or even in some of the bigger towns, you know, whether it be McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's, Taco Hell, Taco John's, you know, some type of fast food joint. And there never used to be like that. You never used to have all that stuff in these, or even some of those bigger towns of like 5 or 10,000 people. You never had fast food joints. You had a family restaurant, or you had your family cooking these big meals for you. So, but that's all gone by the wayside. You know, there's a lot of crap that's out there that we don't realize, and you just need to pay attention to what's actually in those ingredients, you know, and study upon them and see what it does to you.
You know, something else speaking about that, if going back to the wilderness survival, the wilderness medicine and survival aspect, you had talked about, you know, testing, you know, making sure, you know, about medical histories. Well, a lot of the stuff you're not going to know about beforehand. You've never eaten these plants before. You don't know what they're going to do to you. Sample in small quantities at first.
Oh, yeah. Sample in small quantities. You got to wait, what is it, 30 minutes to an hour?
30 minutes to an hour to really see. I usually wait 24 hours to make sure.
You know, you try it on a little piece of your skin at first. If nothing happens, then, you know, after a period of time, you can take a little bite of it, and you got to wait. Yeah, I mean, that's that sort of stuff. When it's, you know, it's the lack of information, and it's because, you know, you want to be a couch potato, whatever it is. The lack of going out there and learning stuff, in this case, since we're going to be, you know, faced with it probably very soon, is going to kill you, essentially. It's going to kill you. I mean, the information is out there. You got the people there. Go to these people. Tap into them. You know, you know, don't go up and start scaring them away, you know, say, oh, they're going to give you know, label you, you know, as a prepper or as a, you know, one of those survivalists and everything. But you need to know the people around you and find out what type of information they know. I mean, that's, you know, that's what it's all about, is learning from learning stuff.
Hey, you know what? I would not have been able to go out and learn how to make bows from river driftwood this summer if I had not asked.
Well,
I really didn't know these people. I really didn't know them, but I said, you know, hey, these guys are talking about this stuff. Will you teach me? The worst they could say was no.
It sounds like you ran across Cody Lundeen and Dave Canterbury.
No, these were my wife's friends. They're from the tribe up here. They're from the Sitsitsika tribe up here. Their res is just north. They invited me out this summer. They looked at me and they said, "You really want to learn?" I was like, "Yeah, I do." So this is, you know, this is what they teach their cultural, I guess that, you know, they're the lore keepers, I guess.
Yep.
You know, they're keeping this stuff alive and they teach the young. So they said, hey, if you really want to learn, we'll take you out. So yeah, I went out, man. I learned how to hunt, track, snare, skin. I learned how to do everything, man, with nothing. I learned how to make my own knives out of rocks.
You probably learned how to do flint mapping too.
I did. I did. I learned. I made my own knife. I did.
Yeah. I mean,
it was actually really cool. And then
some primitive skills. It's those type of, you know, primitive skills that people need to know.
You know, and in fact, there was even a test. The first test was at the end of spring in the fall. Where I did a 3-day survival thing out there. I had to go out 3 days, nothing on me except, you know, my clothes and a knife. Nothing to make fire with even. Then I had to go out this, you know, and then they, you know, that was the agreement. If they were going to teach me this stuff, you know, there had to be consequences if I didn't learn. So the next time we went out with 3 days in the wintertime, and that sucked. That sucked really bad.
Oh, I imagine it did. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, especially, you know, up there in Canada.
It was hard.
You're in Saskatchewan province?
No, I'm in Alberta. I'm two miles north of Montana.
Yeah, I mean that's butt-ass cold up there.
Oh man, you got the Rockies right here. It's miserable. It gets miserable.
Yeah.
It was tough, but you know what? It made me learn more though. It made me study harder because I knew that I was going to have to go out there and put these skills to the test.
And you're that much better prepared than you would be without going to those type of schools or asking those simple questions.
And you know what, that testing thing that we had just talked about with the food, with, you know, different plants, I had no food. Remember this, I had no food. And I'm not that big, you know, I'm not the horticulturalist out there. I don't know this stuff. So that is exactly what I had to do. That first day I spent around, and all I did was gather, you know, different plants that I thought I recognized, and I would, you know, lick the skin, get it on there, leave it on my skin for a little bit, see if it affected me. And then I would take a little sample of it, you know, and wait. I did this for, you know, a day and a half before I actually really ate anything.
It's a plug you had up. What's that one? It's called Miner's Lettuce.
Miner's Lettuce, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you know, there's mushrooms up here that will, I mean, they will kill you. They will kill you.
Oh, yeah.
They will kill you flat out. Nasty stuff.
Yep.
You know, so it, but you know, but there's also mushrooms up here that can be used as poultices as well. There's creeper, you know, bark, you know, white willow bark is aspirin. I mean, that's what it is. You grind it up, it's aspirin. The inside
of it, you know, it's like having like yarrow root. You can I was reading something about it earlier today about yarrow. You can use it as a you can use it as a tea. You can make a tea out of it. And the same thing with was it cayenne peppers?
Cayenne peppers, yes.
You can actually use cayenne peppers, the powder, to actually stop bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that, you know, nature has stuff that'll heal you, it'll help you, it'll feed you, or it'll kill you.
You know, real quick, since you had brought up that bleeding aspect real quick, if you don't mind, you know, one of the past shows we had talked, we had mentioned this before, and we'd actually gone into quite some detail. If you wouldn't mind real quick, because we're down to about 5 minutes or so, and I want you to be able to close out here and throw in your last couple thoughts. Quick, Claude, and other things like this. Do you mind if we touch on those for a moment?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Pros, cons, good, bad. What can you tell us about those?
Well, I don't use Quick Clot. I don't use any of those clotting agents that you can buy out there in the stores. You know, the powders or the Quick Clot that's been soaked into the dressings. And I don't use any of that stuff. One thing, I can't afford it. Quick Clot is like $25-$30. I can't afford it, especially on a 20% disabled veteran's paycheck. I can't afford that. So what I use is and they work perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with them. Try to stay away from the powder form that you pour into the wound, because if you remember correctly, back several years ago when this stuff first started coming out and they was using it over in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were getting a lot of issues with exothermic reactions. It was actually burning the soldiers. While it was stopping the bleeding, clotting the blood, the soldiers were actually getting a thermal burn from the reaction of the chemical. But there's other stuff, Quick Clot. It's an ingredient that's impregnated into the gauze, and you just either put that into the wound or you wrap it around the wound. That works perfectly fine. I have no problem, no issues with it. But you can use stuff like cornstarch. You can use cornstarch to and pour that into the wound, and that'll clot it up. Just remember, whatever you put into that wound, as far as a powder or a liquid or a dressing that goes into that wound, just remember, a medical person has got to take that out during the cleaning process or the debriding process, so they can take a look and see what's actually going on. But if that's keeps you alive and prevents you from bleeding to death, then go. I mean, that's a small price to pay. By all means, use it. I never had Quick Clots back when we was doing this stuff way back in the 80s and 90s. We never had that stuff. We had to use, you stuck tampons inside of a bullet wound, and hopefully that did the job and everything. I got into a big debate online one day with a guy on a Canadian board that I moderate on. He says, "You used a tampon to put into a bullet wound to stop the bleeding?" I said, "Yeah, that's all I had at the time. I had some of those in my pack. I put the tampon in the bullet wound, and it stopped the blood." "Oh, no, we would never use that, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't work." Well, it does work, because I used it, and the person lived. So we got into a big debate about it, and that's the sort of stuff, you can use cornstarch. Cornstarch does the same thing as Quick Clot. It's a powder. You're going to pour it into the wound. It'll stop the bleeding. Same thing with the cayenne pepper. It'll stop the bleeding. So there's many things out there.
What about torso?
That everybody has nowadays that I didn't have back when I was doing this stuff.
What about torso wounds? You had said that that's a no-no.
Oh, torso wounds, you're talking about chest wounds?
Stomach wounds?
Stomach wounds. If you got somebody's guts that are hanging outside, chances are, the entrails are hanging on the ground. You just scoop them back up with some type of cloth. Even if all you had is a T-shirt, whatever the cleanest thing you have with you. I mean, that wound's already contaminated, so don't worry about it. Just put them back on top of the stomach. Don't put them inside, and dress it up as best you can. Chest wound, if it's a second chest wound, get a piece of plastic, like a Ziploc bag, put it on there, tape it on three sides. That way that person can still breathe out, but when he has to breathe in, that plastic will collapse on that. The air cannot come in. Well, when he has to breathe out, the air will escape out like he's supposed to, like it should do, but always check to see if there's a hole on the back side. So you can do it with needles, you know, the needle fluorescentesis, or you can just put a piece of plastic over it. I mean, there's different ways to do things. Depends what you have with you at the time.
All right, Doc. Well, listen, we are at that time now. We're down to our last couple minutes, so do you want to say anything in closing?
Other than learn. Whether it be getting books for your library, talk to the people, whatever you got to do, make sure you study the stuff and know it.
That's pretty much it, and I can't agree with that more. Read, people. Exercise your brain. It's the greatest tool. The greatest tool you have is your brain. Everything else is just an accessory after that. Tomorrow's show, we're going to have Joshua Wohlers on from the 1st Company, 7th Brigade of the Missouri Militia coming on. We're going to be talking to him about the Missouri Militia and all things that are going on in Missouri and what's happening with them. I've really enjoyed my conversations with him. I found him to be quite interesting. So we'll be having him on tomorrow, and we've actually got quite a few good shows lined up. We've got Amelia Foxwell and White Owl coming on to talk to us about the CECOM organization that they're putting together down in the southeast. Somewhat of a standardized regional training organization, militia stay, independent of each other, but it's an organization they're putting together to help standardize some training, communication, hand signals, all that good stuff. And we're also going to be talking about the MTV documentary that was just made with Amelia and them about their militia. And we're going to see how that went and how it's going, as well as the gathering at Duncan that they just came back from. That'll be this Sunday. Next Monday, we're going to have Gary Hunt on. We're going to be talking about our cops, constitutional, and the Supreme Court ruling of John Bad Elk's shooting of a cop. That will be our discussion on next Monday as well. Shows for next month are already lining up, so we're looking forward to those. Everybody, thank you for listening in. Everybody be safe, be free. You take care of yourselves. See you next week. Bye-bye.